It's Libby Sauce here on this Friday, November 30th of 2012, and welcome to the 68th episode of the Last Best Deal podcast. This broadcast is kindly hosted over at radioforall.net. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening theme is Ashley Alicize's A Puzzling Predicament, and the outro will be Bose's King's Quest, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons attribution, specifically CC BY NCSA 3.0 unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by yours truly, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. If you wish to understand the nature of the situation we are all suffering under and what can be done about it, feel free to visit the Last Bastille blog, which is located over at The Last Bastille. Bastille is spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E, thelastbastille.wordpress.com. And for this episode, we're going to cover yet another area of dissident philosophy, that is the nitty-gritty of why good people oppose the establishment. And I guess you could say a type of sequel to an earlier episode that was about firearms. The topic for this episode really is about, I guess you could say, the carrying of firearms, and more specifically, open versus concealed carry. I'm going to read you the following article that was originally published on August 7th earlier this year on the blog that's entitled Openly Carrying Firearms. Firearms are about as American as you can get. Symbolically, they serve as reminders of our hard-won liberties, as guardians of our freedom, and as instruments with which to prevent further violations of our inalienable natural rights. One of the most contentious debates amongst gun owners, aside from those dealing with the technical specifications of the tools themselves, lies with whether it is better to carry concealed or openly. Both open and concealed carry have several traits in common. They are practices whereby gun owners carry a handgun, such as a pistol or a revolver, on their person while they go out in public and perform the many assorted tasks that comprise their daily routines. Various methods of holstering the firearm are used, including hip carry, such as strong side, cross draw, or appendix, carried either outside or inside of the pants, behind the back carry, shoulder carry, thigh carry, and ankle carry. It is very important to be able to retain one's gun while moving about. Nothing is more embarrassing or dangerous than losing your firearm while carrying due to either an equipment failure or user recklessness. Concealed carry enthusiasts tout multiple benefits that they claim surpass those who open carry. Being able to get a drop on a criminal, removing the intimidation that other non-gun owners feel whenever they see a firearm being carried, and reducing the likelihood of police encounters are commonly listed. What CCW permit holders usually neglect to mention are the restraints they must contend with in concealing the handgun, such as uncomfortable carrying positions that also reduce quick drawing, wearing more clothing than is suited for the weather, and worries about printing. Now, this is a real concern since in some states of the Union it is illegal to do so, and it may be grounds for rescinding a CCP or worse. Open carry practitioners, by contrast, deal with an entirely different dynamic. They rely upon the deterrence that an observably holstered handgun would have against a criminal, a much more friendly demeanor when interacting with people throughout the day, and the ability to draw quicker and easier without fussing with layers of clothing. While they have greater liberty in dressing for the weather, it is true that the probability of police encounters is higher. Perhaps the most contentious topic of all between concealed carriers and their open-carrying brethren-in-arms lies in the issue of licensure. A license or permit, by definition, is asking the state for permission to engage in activity that would otherwise be considered by them to be a violation of mala prohibita. Open carry advocates argue that if the Second Amendment, as well as the various state-level constitutions, like Section 23 of the Texas Bill of Rights, explicitly say that it is the inalienable right of the people to keep and bear arms, then asking the state for permission to do so is not only redundant, but also sets a dangerous precedent that would enable the government to flagrantly violate people's rights by asserting such activity is instead a privilege. mentioning the privacy implications to concealed carry advocates about the fact that the states of the union necessarily keep records of CCW permit holders, even in light of the threat fusion centers, does not worry them in the slightest, should give anyone serious doubt as to whether getting a CCP is worth the risk of being profiled by the government. Given the philosophical, utilitarian, and privacy considerations, you would think that it would be a fairly clear decision to make whether open or concealed carry or both. Such is unfortunately not the case. Unlicensed open carry can only be performed in what are called permissive open carry states, which are Alaska, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, South Dakota, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Kentucky, Vermont, North Carolina, and Virginia. Unlicensed concealed carry, also known as constitutional carry, is only legal in Alaska, Wyoming, Arizona, and Vermont. Outside of these legal barriers for both open and concealed carry, you risk violating mala prohibita and experiencing up close and personal the long arm of the state. According to Section 46.02 of the Texas Penal Code, if anyone carries a handgun intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly on or about his person, it is considered an offense as a Class A misdemeanor, whose sentencing can be up to a year in jail and or a maximum fine of $4,000. Some gun owners from both camps have occasionally suggested carrying as an act of civil disobedience. It would be wise to first determine what would be the ultimate goal of such a flagrant disregard for the government's almighty statutes and the prison-industrial complex that necessarily accompanies it. If the goal is to get arrested and draw media attention on the injustice of being punished for carrying in the vain hope of having the state-level legislature pass a bill that would allow the liberty of unlicensed carry, then it would be more effective to open carry in those states of the Union where it is either licensed or totally banned, such as Texas. If the goal is to instead quietly enjoy the ability to carry while evading detection by the government police, then carrying concealed without a permit in those forbidden areas is much more effective. Responsible people who did that would only be discovered if they ever needed the weapon for self-defense. At that point, the probability of not being punished is much higher, since you'd have a person who would otherwise be dead if they had obeyed the statutes. The key counter-economic principle of trading risk for profit would be at play here, and much more applicable than civil disobedience, which is classically intended to change the current statutes on the books by demonstrating the injustice that occurs by their very enforcement. Unless you are ready to go counter-economic by violating mala prohibita as a lifestyle, which would necessarily entail a complete overhaul of the security and privacy measures you would need to take on a regular basis, I would otherwise advise against the civil disobedience approach, especially if you prefer to open carry. Weighing the cost against the benefits, my advice is to vote with your feet by moving to one of the above-mentioned states of the Union if at all possible. Seeing as that is not realistic for those folks who have already put down roots, the next best thing is to, silly as it sounds, visualize Vermont carry. You could expand that by attempting to play the game of changing the law, but unless there is a very high incentive for scumbag state-level legislators to allow the hapless citizenry the liberty of carrying unlicensed firearms, whether open or concealed, it is irresponsible to place hope in the same entity that absolutely refused to kick the TSA child molesters out of all the airports when the federales threatened an air embargo over Texas, of all places. In summation, I agree wholeheartedly with open carry in terms of principle as well as in pragmatic utility. Unfortunately, due to the coercive nature of the state and the concomitant risks of carrying without their blessing, or being put on a government hit list, outweighs the benefits since I inhabit one of the forbidden areas and am not currently in a position to go counter-economic. The best chance of a legal change is Texas HB number 2756, but even that only deals with the authority of a person who is licensed to carry a handgun to openly carry the handgun. The only real consolation I have of this entire fucked up mess is that all this talk of open versus concealed carry deals only with handguns, and hardly at all with long guns, such as rifles and shotguns, which even here in the formerly great state of Texas, I automatically have much more liberty with. And again, that was my article entitled Openly Carrying Firearms. And now for a postscript. You know, a lot of guys kind of get on my case, and have been for some time now, about, you know, why don't I talk about firearms as much? And I kind of have to keep telling them that more important than the tools are the skills and knowledge and how to use them. It's warfare, more generally military science, that's more important, not just, you know, not just, you know, I mean, I could be talking about howitzers all day, but that wouldn't strike them nearly as cool, because they obviously don't have access to howitzers. And a problem I've seen a lot in the, for lack of a better term, the gun culture, both within and without, and out, both within and outside of the Patriot community, is that it very much revolves around this notion of the tactical, you know, buying all these gadgets and whatnot that you really don't need for a firearm for the most part. You know, not everybody needs to be using holographic sights on their rifle, for example. Especially when scopes work just fine. Or even just iron sights. I mean, if you're really dealing in close quarters, you know, you don't even need a scope at that point, just because everything's all close up and personal. And of course, there are issues of the tactical gadgets requiring batteries and stuff like that. And it's really just kind of a headache after that. And that's even before you consider scenarios like an EMP going off or anything like that. I'm just saying that under normal, you know, under current normal conditions, quote unquote, you'd have to have batteries. And so it's a lot of futzing around, but it does play into a notion that I saw a vlogger, don't remember his name, a vlogger used once, which was credit card survivalists. And I guess you could say the same thing about a lot of gun owners or credit card gun owners. In fact, I remember there was a fellow who was featured on an episode of Doomsday Preppers, and which was on Discovery Channel, and one of the episodes showed this older, I believe he was a southern gentleman, middle-aged, and they would show, when they introduced him, they had, you know, they showed him and his wife, you know, sitting on the porch, you know, kind of enjoying their golden year, so to speak, but then he would be kind of narrating a little bit in the background, saying about how he's trying to prepare for the apocalypse or some such thing. And then for some strange idiotic reason, he then showed off his gun collection, and then basically kind of at the end of it, it turns out that he didn't have enough bullets for all of his guns. Which is that's kind of like the first, well, that was something you think would be covered first, but the thing that was kind of really glaring before he even admitted that was just simply the amount of guns he had. It was just unconscionable. I mean, how many revolvers do you need? I mean, the guy literally had like 20 different revolvers, not to mention all of his pistols. And, you know, at some point it's like it kind of gets really redundant. I mean, unless you're going to be the armorer or the gun or a gunsmith or again, like an armorer for your militia unit or even security team. Like, that would make sense, I guess, but you see, he didn't have, I don't think they ever showed him, like in a machine shop, actually, like, you know, tooling up pistols or something, or rifles. Nothing like that. He just collects and collects and spends his copious disposable income on this one particular tool. Never mind the fact that he barely, and admitted, he barely invested anything in, that involved a water collection, just even basic water collection, like from rainfall. I mean, it was just completely absurd, you know. I mean, that's the funny thing. You don't need that many guns. You can adequately get by on a couple, especially if you're on a budget. And then for those of you who are not constrained by a budget, you really don't need many more than that. And, I mean, obviously I'll save that for, you know, a future podcast. But suffice it to say for right now, I've been noticing a lot of bickering among gun owners. You know, the stereotypical AR-15 versus AK-47, and it's just like, ugh, this again, really? And various versions and themes and permutations on that. And this extends also to open and concealed carry. I mean, they act like enemies. It's like, okay, but, you know, the state hates both of you guys as well as people from the mainline public who have a who are haplophobes. And haplophobia is a irrational fear or phobia of firearms. Why don't you try and make sure that we all have the liberty to keep and bear arms? Which also means, which I would, you know, it infers that, you know, you would use them, and part of using them is carrying them, etc. I would just kind of try and emphasize your point of commonality because, you know, both of you support the Second Amendment, for example, and so on and so forth. And then the respective, and then like, the, you know, the one section out of the Texas Bill of Rights, for example, that's all about keeping and bearing arms. Section 23, I believe it was. So, I'm just dumbfounded that the gun owners would really seriously just kind of bicker with each other. And, you know, that needs to stop. It does need to stop. Unless you're going to civilly discuss with each other more technical details, let's say, okay, maybe, you know, ankle carry is not as comfortable as hip carry. Okay, that's like a serious discussion. But don't do this, it's not good for example, I've heard open carry people called some of the concealed carry folks cowards. Oh, you're not proud enough of your firearm to display it and festoon it like a peacock. I'm kind of mixing arguments. Just one moment, let me get it straight. The open carry people tell the concealed carry people that, oh, you're being coward by not displaying your firearm, and then the concealed carry people tell the open carry people, well, you're full of chutzpah and machismo by festooning your firearm like a peacock on your hip so openly. I've heard that one too. And both of you guys need to stop. Both of you care about your own personal security, and by extension, that of the people immediately around you, by carrying in the first place. You're already trying to, and also the other reason why the government hates you guys too is because the sole role of the state is to provide security, fundamentally. There are many ways and permutations of doing that, but it's really about security, not really about anything else for the most part. So by you doing that, you are, even if you don't mean to, you are at least inadvertently challenging the very legitimacy of the state, which is any form of the state, even a night watchman state, even a republic. Any form of the state, or government, if you will. That's why. So, I mean, you guys are literally in the crosshairs, so there is no reason for you guys to bicker and argue. In fact, it actually weakens you guys dramatically. Now, fortunately, the corporate horde media really hasn't picked up on it, at least that I've noticed as of yet, which is so far a good sign, but you don't want to... it would be best to avoid something like that in the future. So, unless there are going to be, like, technical questions, you know, such as this method of carry is more comfortable than that method of carry, where this one allows quicker draw than the other one, or something like that. Otherwise, you guys should not be bickering, you guys shouldn't be bickering at all. I mean, you both are for the individual natural right of self-defense, that natural liberty. And natural liberty does not require the state. That's what you need to be emphasizing. You know, and also those kind of catchphrases, too, that have been relevant in pointing out certain facts. You know, for example, when seconds count, the police are minutes away. You know, the response times for police. My favorite, personally, was Chris Broughton, the guy who, the Malcolm X lookalike back in 2009, who went to the one anti-Obamacare rally. And he was openly carrying both a pistol and his AR And the media did hop on that. I think CNN specifically, but I think the corporate media in general hopped on it. And he was put on the SPLC hit list, which is how I found out about him. But yeah, I looked at the footage for Chris Broden, and he did admit to being an anarchist. I thought it was funny, though, several of his quips, both to a woman of European lineage, where she was saying that him carrying firearms openly made her uneasy, and then he responded with, well, you know, lady, arguably not that long ago, you know, it was the amount of melanin in my skin that made people like you uncomfortable. And it's like, ooh, nice. And then, of course, there was the other point that he made about, like, look, I can't carry a policeman on me to protect me all the time, so I've got to do it. That's why I have these tools. And he was very calm and cool and collected about it. You know, as far as participating in the info war, he did an absolutely fantastic job in terms of counter-propaganda. And that's the thing. We need more Chris Brodens. Chris Broden was like the perfect or near-perfect dissident diplomat. He did everything pretty much. I can't really think of any mistakes he made right offhand. But he did so much correct that even if you made some slight mistakes, it's like, okay, you know, don't do it again, obviously. But and then, you know, if, when you go do it. But look at all the stuff you did correctly. I mean, it was just amazing. So Chris Broden, my hat's off to you. You did absolutely the right thing. No question about it. And it pissed off the establishment something fierce. And because look at their reaction. So, yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is. But that's the thing, though, is that when it comes to carrying firearms in public, you can really see how an interesting yardstick you can see about how much liberty you have in any geographical region, you know, a tax plantation, you know, which is basically what's passed for as a country. You can tell how much liberty you have on a tax plantation by how hassled you are if you try and carry a firearm, concealed or otherwise. And it's interesting, a lot of countries you will be thrown in jail pretty quickly and all that. Here in the States, it's some level of liberty and some of the states of the union, but it's like, it's this, and I gave the list earlier, it's, for the most part, it's very, very contentious here, and it didn't used to be like that at all, but that's what happens when you get a bunch of, you know, as Ron Paul recently called them, psychopathic authoritarians, who, and this is also going back into like the 90s and 80s, by the way, the gun control advocates, you know, save the children, paradise the children, and yeah, next thing you know, the public schools are basically prisons for children. So how is that helping the children? You're keeping them so bottled up because you're so scared that they might be kidnapped by non-existent child molesters or whatever, that you don't really care about the fact that they've become latchkey children and are subject wholly to the propaganda of the establishment that those particular agents of the state, in this case public school teachers, that those teacher agents are inflicting upon your children, even if they conflict with your own morality, because you gave up the influence over your children's upbringing when you sent them to public school. And so when they come out of it, part a lot of the reason people of my generation are big-time gun control freaks is that that's what they were taught to think when they were on the inside. So that's why, you know, now obviously the whole public school versus private versus homeschooling thing needs to be saved for another episode, but suffice it to say, you want to know why things have gotten so bad? In large part, look at the public schools and look what they're teaching. Look at the people they're churning out, and then give it enough time. Next thing you know, the establishment has given itself enough of a pretext to basically take away the liberties, at least regarding arms, especially the carrying of arms, away from, you know, away from people when they do their legislative, you know, little, you know, gay ritual. Because, you know, passing a bill is kind of gay in a lot of ways. And I don't mean that in, and really what I mean is that it's very fruity. I mean, there are homosexual men who are very masculine and who, you know, there's nothing bad about them. And they get repulsed by stuff like this. I mean, I kind of mean in the sense like in that one South Park episode with the Harley Davidson writers, where the Harley Davidson writers were called fag, but it had nothing to do with homosexual men. In that kind of sense, if that makes any sense. Yeah, so, I mean, that's what state, I mean, that's what, you know, legislatures in general are, you know, federal or state. They're fags. Like the Harley Davidson writers in the South Park episode. I'm serious. And those are the guys who pass the gun control statutes. Every single time there is a suspiciously violent incident, like the like Hassan or Loeffner or Holmes or the guy at the Sikh temple, you know, then there's all this noise about, oh, you know, firearms are dangerous. We need to take them the hands out. You know, all this, you know, the establishment basically uses the Hegelian dialectic to push through what they wanted to do in the first place. They were just, they either create a pretext or they take advantage of something bad that happened and use that as a pretext. And they just take advantage of something that genuinely occurred. But either way, the result's the same. It is what it is. And so the nice thing about, and that's the other thing too. I remember when Pink Pistols got started, and basically those were the homosexuals who were basically bucking the the politicized homosexuals that were all about, you know, part of their platform was that they were all about gun control. And the Pink Pistols said, no, fuck you, we've experienced so much physical violence at the hands of bigots and, you know, just run-of-the-mill criminals that go after straight people and stuff like that, that we're gonna learn how to use firearms to defend ourselves. Fuck you. Yes, I'm still a homosexual, but I like my guns. You know, the Pink Pistols are fantastic in that regard. And there should be more like them, because it shows that people don't have to be balkanized against each other along other kinds of demographics in this, you know, in this context, bisexual orientation. You know, the carrying and use of firearms is intended to be used by everyone because it's about individual self-defense, which is all about defending your life, liberty, and property. So it's pretty much universal for the most part. I don't really see any reason why it would not be applicable to anyone. That, generally speaking, is the classical liberal tradition. So I just love it. Anytime these corporate whore hacks get up there on their little soapbox and they say that anyone who tries to push for firearms ownership, carrying, use, etc., shooting, basically, is some sort of it's like a weird combination of like the oddest adjectives, like it's a racist, bigot, hick, something else. When in fact, actually, if you were to break it down by socioeconomic demographic, it's usually like middle class people. Well, think about it. I mean, if a lot of these guys are making the mistake of the tactical stuff, they have to have enough disposable income. You know, the bourgeoisie really only has enough. are the only people around, for the most part, who have the disposable income as well as the inclination to do that. So it would kind of make sense. But it does cut across all sorts of things. Look at Chris Broughton. He was a man of African lineage, but he was openly carrying firearms. Look at the Pink Pistols. They're carrying and using firearms. Look, and then just look at your, you know, stereotypical, you know, militia folk. They're absolutely carrying and using firearms. And then, you know, doing FTXs on the weekends. So, that's the thing. This is for everybody. There's no rule that says that, you know, that only a specific demographic of people are allowed to use firearms. In fact, if you actually try and buy a firearm legally from a gun store, pretty much any gun store in general, they will want you to fill out an ATF form. And on that form, you have to put down your race. I actually asked a gunsmith about this, and he said, yes, you have to put down your race. That's what we're required to ask of our customers, because that's what, you know, the federales impose upon us. Otherwise, they'll close our shop and seize the inventory and that sort of thing. And the inventory is the firearms, obviously. But yeah, they must know what your ancestral lineage is. They must know. So here's the question. Who are the racists here? Who are the bigots? In practice, not what the corporate or media tells you, but who is in practice, who's really doing it? You know, you look at that one government form, you look at versions on a theme of it, you also look at the corporate horde media and see how they're trying to balkanize everybody in various cases, not just over the gun issue, but just over other things too. And then you look at the dissident side and you see how they actually act. You see who, the composite of the actual people who are pushing for whatever it is, in this case, gun ownership. And then you see we now have a contradiction. And regardless of what you think is accurate, it's important to point out that there is a contradiction and that contradictions cannot exist logically. Check your premises. You will find that at least one of them is wrong, if not both. And really, that's really all I wanted to point out, is that the open carry and concealed carry people should not bicker with each other. They got more in common than they don't. And then the other end of it really is don't believe the corporate whore propaganda, because the establishment is scared of these guys big time. And that's the other thing too. More people need to carry, both concealed and open. More people do, because as more and more people do, it becomes harder and harder for the corporate or media to demonize them, which then serves a pretext for the government to do any sort of crackdown or intimidation schemes, like with the profiling or whatever. That's what needs to happen. Now, to be fair, in my own personal situation, I've already outlined at the end of the article what my own situation was. So there are choices I have to make. However, that's with me and my own life and whatever. And I know other people are in the same boat too. However, if the people in the other states who do have the liberty of doing it without reprisal from the government, if they do it more often, that kind of gives a incentive for the possibility that it might be formally legalized, and thus it would not be mala prohibitat to either engage in open carry or even constitutional carry, which is unlicensed concealed carry. So, again, the more that it's practiced, the better chance there is of it being formally recognized. Until that happens, though, and that's a trend. That's a lot of people doing it. Personally, I would not recommend relying on that. I'm just saying, in terms of trends, that's what would be required. As far as your own personal situation goes, which is what I care about with my life, obviously, I already kind of laid it out what the current situation is. And yeah, there are going to be some risks. And you just have to decide what you're willing to risk. And if you're not willing to risk, then, you know, that's fine. But if you're in one of the forbidden areas, as I am, you have to be knowledgeable to the extent of what your potential punishment would be, and then do a cost-benefit analysis and then go from there. And I don't think that's unreasonable, because it also demonstrates that we're in a condition of tyranny right now. And it's not, and don't misunderstand me, it's not just because over this one issue. It's many things. You know, go listen to the previous podcast episodes. I mean, I pretty much lay it out. Not all of it, not even most of it, but a good chunk of it anyway. But this is another thing to kind of tack on. And so the more people carry firearms, that's, technically you don't even need to shoot anybody, even in self-defense, arguably. I'm just saying, just by carrying it by itself puts the establishment on edge and whatever. And, you know, that's, hell, I mean, I'm sorry if the alternative media actually does good work by basically becoming the new press vis-a-vis First Amendment to the federal Constitution. You know, I'm sorry if people actually start engaging in their liberties pursuant to both the federal Bill of Rights as well as their own respective state's Bill of Rights. I'm sorry if the establishment doesn't like that, but that's what they're for. It's an enumerated version of reminding people what their, at the very least, yes, civil liberties, but I would say more importantly are their natural rights, that condition of natural liberty. That's what's really important, because even if, the United States, Canada, Mexico merge into the North American Union tomorrow, your civil liberties would go to pot. That's honest. That doesn't change your natural rights or that condition of natural liberty at all. Not one iota. Now, it doesn't have to be respected by the government, but you still have access to it by virtue of the fact you are still alive. That's it. And that's what really needs to be recognized if we're going to move the case for liberty forward and hopefully secure our liberties one way or another. And that's all I got to say about that particular topic for the moment. For next episode, we will explore more dissident philosophy by examining the carnival of distractions within the alternative media, as well as messianic figureheads. I'm Sleepy Salsa, and thanks for listening.